Good morning, this is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Every time you post to Twitter or Facebook, these sites are collecting data about you. And at this point, you probably ought to expect that by participating in social media sites, you are giving up some of your privacy. It's just the name of the game.
Some see big data from social media sites as a godsend for researchers, a perfect way to study social habits with huge numbers of people. But what happens when that data, with your personal details still attached, is published for a study for the whole world to see?
Well, a recent release of a data set from the dating site OkCupid has raised the ire of one local research ethicist. Michael Zimmer is on the faculty at UW-Milwaukee's School of Information Studies, and he's the director of the Center for Information Policy Research. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers about the release and why it raises some ethical concerns.
The interesting thing with this OkCupid study was the fact that it's one in the pattern of researchers who are studying social media data and then releasing it to the public with this presumption that the data is already out there. And a lot of the work that I've done in the past has been looking at how either this kind of research is done improperly, where the researchers had to log into a system or somehow gain access to a system in order to retrieve this data, or that the users just never had this kind of expectation that by joining a platform like OkCupid, that their information could be gathered and amassed and released out to the public in such a manner.
Yeah, that was one of my questions. I mean, when people sign up for things like OkCupid or Twitter or Facebook, are they given the information that, yeah, your whatever you put here might be used later for research?
Yeah, that's a complicated problem. And a lot of times users don't fully understand what they're signing up for. Or I understand that Twitter is a platform where I'm going to share 140 character messages, but it gets kind of lost in the sea of all the thousands of other messages that came out at the same very moment. And don't really have a clear understanding that that stuff could be archived and then perhaps later accessed by someone. So there's this issue about whether or not users fully understand the nature of the platforms. But there is that research side, like you mentioned. Very few of the social media platforms have a clause in the terms of service or in the agreements that you sign that say, and oh, by the way, we're going to let researchers access this data. Occasionally, the companies themselves may use it. They might want to test a change to their interface or how, you know, the font they use, and they want to be able to do some internal research. But typically, if researchers want to have access to data, they have to go through some other kind of formal processes. There's different kinds of tools that the platforms provide researchers to give them limited sets of data, usually anonymized data. In this particular case, the researcher just logged in and started grabbing data just haphazardly, and that's where the real problem was.
So we do know how they got the data, because initially you were saying, or they said they used a bot.
Right. It's still a little bit unclear. And this is a researcher who I've learned after the fact tends to be a little bit rogue, perhaps, kind of doing his own thing. That's actually one of the interesting dangers in this environment, that it's really easy for just about anybody to get this kind of data. You don't have to be a computer scientist with years of experience and all kinds of expensive computers. But what it sounds like they did is that they first used an automated bot to try to create a fake profile and find people on OkCupid. And when someone becomes visible, they had a script that would scrape all that data and put it into a database. And then later it turned out that they didn't seem to be doing what they wanted it to do. And the solution that they ultimately chose is actually quite unclear in the draft paper that they put online. So we're not exactly sure how they did it, which is actually another one of the problems that for good research, you're going to explain your methods a little bit better so it can go under peer review and scrutiny. And this researcher just seemed to fail on a number of different levels in that regard.
And one of the problems that you mentioned, as someone who has signed up for OkCupid and used it in the past, you do have the ability to set your profile.
Right.
So it can only be viewed by other users. So you have the assumption of some kind of privacy, that it's not open to the world at large, only other people who are seeking out partners on OkCupid.
Right. And that's important both like in a technical sense and also in sort of a broader psychological sense. I mean, technically, you're right. When you set up an OkCupid profile, you can make it visible only to other users. And that's a way to sort of manage your privacy. I don't want it to be visible on Google just when you're logged in. So when a researcher like this says, well, this stuff is already public, what he kind of really means is like this stuff was visible to other users who happened to also create a profile. And those aren't the same thing. But also psychologically, I think it's important for users when they sign up for this thing, they have this assumption or these set of expectations that I know this data is like kind of public, but it's meant for this community. I'm creating this profile and sharing it because I'm assuming everyone else is creating profiles and sharing. And we have this kind of like mutual exchange. And doing this kind of research sometimes violates that assumption. And to me, that's a problem that we as researchers at least need to stop and think about. And I'm not convinced this particular researcher did.
So one of the things in his study in particular, he didn't make the users anonymous.
Correct.
So he essentially, he publishes all this information about them. And he also keeps their name attached to that.
Right. Yeah. Whatever name or email address or any kind of personal information that was part of their profile stayed with this data that he released.
I mean, with studies like this, have we heard from any of the people who have had their information published who have said, wait, 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 I didn't think that this was going to be used that way?
In this particular study, we haven't, and also because this only happened a few weeks ago, and we may not have heard from other enough people. I've done other research, and I've looked at other studies. There was one study where there was a set of students at Harvard that were included in a piece of research, and there I heard from some people, you know, behind closed doors that you know I was actually a part of this data set, and this troubles me. The most famous case is actually from a number of years ago when AOL. Was still a search engine, and they released data to academic researchers to help study how people use search engines. And they actually removed people's names and their email addresses, but all the records still had unique identifiers. And the New York Times was actually able to re-identify one of those people just by piecing together their search queries, because people often search for their address or their name or their other kinds of things. And they could actually re-identify someone even when AOL took the steps to try to anonymize that data set. And that shows how complicated this is. This researcher didn't take any steps to anonymize. But even when we do take steps to anonymize, sometimes that's imperfect.
So it's difficult to anonymize the data, but at the same time, the use of this kind of data is becoming increasingly more popular. And it also reveals a lot of information that I think people would find valuable. Mm-hmm. How do we temper that desire with, you know, the realities of anonymizing this information and keeping those identities safe?
There is a growing interest in studying this kind of data. Social media data, internet data is a valuable resource for different kinds of academic disciplines. And there's also a large movement for making this data public. There's an open data movement in order to allow us to scrutinize these kinds of studies by making the data sets that we use visible and accessible for everyone. But you have this challenge, like you mentioned, about how do we make sure that we're protecting the people that are in this data? How do we make sure we have anonymity? There are a lot of people working in computer science and mathematics to try to help us do make our data sets more anonymous in terms of the technology. But we also have ethical review boards that are supposed to be reviewing this research. So if a researcher wants to study Facebook data or Twitter data, they go to an ethical review board with their proposal, and the review board evaluates it. In this case, the researcher didn't do that. So perhaps a review board would have said this is sensitive data because it's about people's love life or their passions. Maybe we need to get consent, or maybe you should do some anonymization of that data. But because he didn't do that, we have this kind of a debacle that he's faced with. But hopefully, as we start going forward, there's more and more attention being paid to the ethics related to this research. So we can encourage more research like this to happen, but as long as the researchers go through the proper ethical steps.
So you were just at a conference in Cologne, Germany, that was really all about this, was
right.
About the ethics of using this kind of big data. What does one do at a conference like that?
Well, it's a really interesting experience. I've been working and thinking about these issues of what we call internet research ethics for a number of years. And I'm part of a community of scholars that are internet researchers, and we pay pretty good attention to this. But there are more and more disciplines out there in more of what I'll call like a pure computer science or information science, where researchers are doing some amazing computational work, thinking about big data research and those kinds of studies. And they haven't had the thought about research ethics before because they're used to doing just with data and not really thinking about the fact that there's people that are connected to that data. So at this conference, we had a workshop. We were trying to sort of bridge that gap. Get these researchers who are routinely studying the web and social media to step back and think a little bit more about some of the ethical implications of collecting this data, how am I processing this data, how am I releasing it in open repositories, and trying to sort of get change the culture a little bit so they pay more attention to the ethical dimensions. I think it was pretty successful, but we still have a lot of work to do.
Do you think that the companies like OkCupid, like Facebook, who are collecting this data, do you think they have a role in trying to anonymize these big data sets?
Yeah, absolutely. And most of these tech companies want to support research. A lot of them are they hire researchers and PhDs to help run their companies, and they want to have partnerships with other researchers out there in academia. So they are interested in this. Some of them provide certain levels of access to researchers in order to do that. Twitter recently had some grants that they offered, a competition that the best, couple of different proposals will give you access to our research data to do your proposal. Facebook actually had a representative at this conference talking about internal research ethics at Facebook. As they do more internal research on their users, they want to make sure that they're following ethical principles as well. So internally, they have an ethical process that they follow. And hopefully the technology companies are recognizing the importance of research and the importance of ethics, and we're sort of working together at a solution.
Michael, thank you so much for joining me here in studio.
Great. Thank you so much.
Michael Zimmer is an associate professor at UW-Milwaukee's School of Information Studies, and he's the director of the Center for Information Policy Research. He spoke with Joy Powers.